Today, good versus evil in memoriam. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance and the Listest World, and that is Post covering finance and property news. The 21st of December is the solstice. Technically speaking, the solstice is a specific moment, not a whole day. And in 2025, it happens at 15:03 on the 21st of December UK time, where we'll have the shortest day of the year. And simultaneously, of course, the summer solstice is happening in the Southern Hemisphere. Despite determining the calendar and seasons, modern culture tends to forget these waymarkers, with the winter solstice often forgotten in the run-up to Christmas, even though it's an important reason we have midwinter celebrations at all. The Earth spins on an axis tilted by 23.5 degrees, and this is the reason for the seasons. In December, Earth's northern axis is tilted away from the sun, with the midday sun hanging over the Tropic of Capricorn, a line 23.5 degrees south of the equator. The Tropic of Capricorn is the most southerly point on Earth where the sun can appear directly overhead. While June's solstice is marked by viewing the rising sun, December's is associated with the setting sun at Stonehenge in Wiltshire in the UK, where the sun sets to the southwest of the stone circle on the winter solstice. It's quite a sight. Traditionally, this day celebrates the fact that from then on, in the north at least, days get longer, symbolising the light, good, winning against the dark, evil. This year, of course, the 21st of December is also a special day as we remember the events of just a week ago at Bondi Beach, one of my favourite places on the planet. Following last week's shootings in a crazy rampage, we saw evil at work, but now people have been remembering and putting candles in their windows. We pause to remember all those affected directly or indirectly, with the hope that our leaders go beyond lip service and announceables to consider the root causes which led to this disaster. From evil, we hope good will come, just as the darkness turns to light. But for me personally, 21st of December will always be most significant because 4 years ago, I lost my beloved wife Jill, who died after a long battle with the asbestos-caused disease mesothelioma. Reflecting on this painful anniversary today, I can say that for me on that day, I lost my best friend, who I nursed through the previous painful 5 years as she battled with a terminal disease despite two major operations and much medication. Professor Jill was a fighter, and she brought her academic prowess to bear on understanding the root causes of the disease and what could be done about it. And she created a charity, which we still run today, called Asbestos Awareness Australia, which presents all her research and which forms an ongoing platform to lobby for greater awareness and political intervention to deal with the scourge of asbestos. The charity has its own website and also its YouTube channel, and this year I have been able to help several Australian families deal with asbestos in their homes. Despite those strong political lobbying, the broader political and corporate landscape is still literally sweeping the risk of asbestos under the carpet. Despite this year, it's come back to haunt us via kiddies' sand in playgrounds, traces in garden mulch, and even from wind turbines. Jill's dying wish was that no one else would be exposed to the fibres from asbestos, which caused the illness to develop in her years later. She did some amazing interviews just before she died, and they're still available on YouTube.
So, Jill, the last question, in a way the most difficult, what do you want your lasting legacy to be relating to asbestos?
My lasting legacy would be I want to do anything at all possible and to encourage others to do whatever they can that's possible to save other people's lives. My entire work for 3 years has been on an unpaid basis to try and just save one life. If we can save one life as a result of the work that we've been doing, then that makes it all worthwhile.
Jill, thank you for your work, thank you for your passion, and the messages that you've shared with us today are critical. We're going to make sure that they are widely disseminated.
Thank you.
I'll put links below. Yet, we still see more deaths from exposure to asbestos, not less. In a recent release, the ACTU warned that without an urgent overhaul of the laws covering asbestos removal, as many as 27,000 Australians will die from exposure to old and degrading asbestos over the course of this century. Despite a national ban on asbestos 21 years ago, more than 6 million tonnes of asbestos material remains in Australia's built environment. And that's probably a conservative estimate. At the current slow pace of removal, we will still have asbestos in our homes and workplaces at the end of this century, 100 years after it was banned. The latest Asbestos National Strategic Plan, the ANSP, says this will mean a further 27,000 Australians will encounter the toxic material and are expected to die from that deadly exposure in communities Australia-wide in the coming decades. Overall registered deaths rose in 2024, and we've reached now 187,268, and it continues to be added to each year as we're looking at around 4,000 deaths from diseases attributable to asbestos exposure, including lung cancer at more than 3,200, mesothelioma at around 800, as well as smaller numbers from asbestosis, ovarian cancer, and cancer of the larynx. Occupational exposure to asbestos is actually the seventh leading risk factor for cancer, but we are seeing a rise in the so-called third wave, mainly homeowners doing DIY work on their own properties. The only way to eliminate the risk of disease is to avoid exposure to airborne asbestos fibres. And actually, Australia has one of the highest measured incidence rates for mesothelioma in the world. Each year in Australia, between 700 and 800 people, about two people each day, are diagnosed with the rare and aggressive cancer. And in the 2022-23 financial year, the estimated health system expenditure for mesothelioma was around $49.4 million, with total cancers at around $18.9 billion. And it's worth noting that in the UK, around 2,700 people are diagnosed with mesothelioma each year, according to the NHS. So it is a broader problem, not just an Australian-specific one. Now, I want to put the deaths in Australia in perspective. There was a total of 101 road deaths during the month of November 2025 across Australia. And during the 12 months ending November 2025, there were 1,332 road deaths. That was a 3% increase compared to the 12-month period ending November 2024. Now, while governments spent around $10 billion on roads last year, around $600 million was spent on targeted safety programs, and they were clearly earmarked for reducing crashes. The rest is tied up in broader infrastructure projects whose safety impact is harder to measure, as noted by the Australian Automobile Association. But in comparison, while federal agencies and the Asbestos and Silica Safety and Eradication Agency, the ASEA, maintain that all forms of asbestos are carcinogenic, and they support national eradication strategies and international advocacy against claims of safe use of asbestos, despite continued lobbying, politicians want to look the other way because the scale of the problem with one in three buildings across the country, including many public buildings, including schools and hospitals, is, well, astronomical. The truth is, the only way to eliminate the risk of disease is to avoid exposure to airborne asbestos fibres. Around half of asbestos claims in Australia are against one company, James Hardie, with the company expected to pay out around $1.8 billion over the next 30 years. So while unions and public health groups press for mandatory removal and stronger workplace powers, industry lobbying and international debates over asbestos complicate consensus and indeed global regulation. Jill's academic research brought all this into sharp contrast in her work on the Asbestos Awareness web presence, including a number of videos which summarise the key issues surrounding corporate influencing and political deafness. I want to highlight that there is no cure for mesothelioma, which is mainly caused by being exposed to asbestos, a material that's been banned in Australia since the end of 2003. Though in practice, it is still being imported in some sheets of materials from China and is still widely present in the built environment, as well as some cosmetics and even talcum powder. While some exposures to asbestos occur in the workplace, it's now spilled out into the community. A number of cases are rising not falling, as many experts have predicted. This is because there are close to 30 places that you might find asbestos in homes, and old asbestos deteriorates as it weathers or is disturbed, but is also found in things like floor coverings, tiles, and other areas where people disturb it regularly. Now, it can take many years after being exposed to asbestos, somewhere between 20 and 60 years, for mesothelioma to develop. Due to its aggressive nature, mesothelioma has a very low survival rate compared to other cancers. Jill's 5 years was above average, although we traced her exposure back to DIY that she did in her 20s and 30s. Jill, in her research, highlighted some common myths about asbestos. They include that asbestos is no longer a problem since it's been banned, or you can easily identify asbestos by looking at it, or asbestos is only dangerous if it's disturbed, or asbestos was only used in commercial or industrial buildings, not homes, and short-term exposure is not harmful. These are all lies, they're myths, and yet they are still being repeated. The truth is, any exposure to the fibres is a risk, and actually women seem to be more at risk of developing cancer, especially in the DIY environment. This is at odds with earlier findings which related to mainly male work environments. So, on the anniversary of Jill's death, I want to turn evil into good by reminding you to think asbestos. If you are considering buying a property, especially if it was built before, say, 2010, it's worth getting it checked by survey before progressing. And if you're considering DIY projects, again, get it checked first, and also use protective clothing and take precautions. And of course, we need to continue to press government to come clean on the risks and bring forward real action plans. Immediate priority should be to strengthen border controls and to ensure that imported components are tested. We should mandate risk-based removal plans for public buildings, fund targeted removal incentives for low-income and indigenous housing, and beyond, longer term, we need to accelerate national removal targets, increase licensed removal capacity, and fund surveillance and support affected people. But of course, there is a political reality here. Progress is slowed by cost, competing budget priorities, legal and regulatory complexity, and industry resistance. And it's also questioned by some science, which of course is on the payroll. But I think governments can accelerate asbestos removal by combining targeted financial incentives, stronger regulation and enforcement, capacity building for licensed removalists, and risk-based prioritisation of public and vulnerable housing, designed to avoid unsafe rush removals and to scale disposal capacity. And a closing thought. In my experience, I still grieve Jill's death. It's not like the flu, as some I suspect think. I have been permanently changed by her passing. It's the loss of a limb, part of me. But on the 21st of December, I reaffirm my intent to turn evil to good and darkness to light. So think asbestos, Jill, in memoriam. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.